now. And, all right. Good day, my name is Kenneth Zitnik, and today I'll be speaking to you on behalf of our team, the Copernicans, as our team leader. Today, my team will be facing off against our nemesis, the Explorers. The Copernicans' position is that space exploration is vitally important for society. That is, we are pro-space exploration. My fellow teammates will further develop our position that space exploration is vital in the following ways. Team member Kelly Tuverson will talk about the medical advances that are a result of the space programs, or the scientists who have come from the space programs who have contributed to our knowledge of the medical. Team member Brian Leak will talk about technological advances that are a direct result of the space program. And team member Skip Murray will talk about the economic benefits which are out there for the space program.
That's right.
The Copernicans will show you with scientific evidence by the end of this debate how space exploration is vital and needed by our society. We will also show you how, while our opponents have an interesting view, that it is a common and misguided view. These misguided views, such that our opponents have, are popular, and that is why it is important to dispel these views. These views include a high cost of the space program, the pollution of space, and that space exploration is just not necessary. For example, the view that space exploration costs too much. NASA has a small budget as compared to the rest of the federal budget, as demonstrated by their fiscal year 2007 budget request, in which NASA requested $16.8 billion from the federal government. As a result, this is information from NASA administration statements about fiscal year 2007 budget. Whereas if you compare this to the $23.7 billion in pork barrel spending in the year 2005, for anyone who doesn't know, pork barrel spending is basically a way that politicians use to get benefits for their state or their beneficiaries just by forcing a bill or benefit to be passed in order for a bill to be passed. So basically it's extortion. And that is a report on annual pig book tracing taxpayer spending that was aired on Fox Network on Thursday, April 7, 2005. Additionally, our social program spending, as reported by Richard Wolf in USA Today in an article called Growth in the Federal Spending Unchecked, he talks about how the federal spending of nearly 20.8 cents for every dollar an economy generates is on social programs. So we can see clearly that the cost of the space program is not that bad. The view that space is being polluted, so we should not explore it, is facetious, and that most of the debris will burn up into entry into the Earth's atmosphere, which can be observed when you're viewing any comets entering the atmosphere. The last view is that space exploration is just not necessary. It's just not true, since the bottom line is that the Earth is going through a life cycle, as described by an intro by Peter Ward, from the National Geographic News, in a column called The Life and Death of the Planet. In this, Peter Ward talks about the book that he and Donald Brownlee, authors of Life and Death of the Planet, give. In this book, he describes how every planet has a life cycle into which just certain conditions are basically viable for life, meaning that at certain points only the temperature and atmosphere are right. He talks about how the decreasing levels of CO2 in the atmosphere will eventually lead to an end of plant life and death of the planet. Additionally, the heat from the sun, since the heat from the output of the sun always increases over time, has already risen by 30% since its conception 4.7 billion years ago, will eventually cause the death of the planet as well. So with that being said, we can see that space exploration is vital in that we will eventually need, if we want to have the human survival of the species, to find new ways to explore space or set up other ways of life so we do not go extinct. I will now turn it over to our opposing team leader, Zoe, but after her, my fellow teammate Kelly will be going and describing the medical benefits of space exploration. So now, over to you, Zoe.
Thank you, Ken. My name is Zoe. I am the team captain for the Explorers. Presenting the first argument will be Sarah. The second argument will be Stephanie. And the third argument will be Jennifer. Since the 1950s, we've sent thousands of spacecraft into space. This has allowed us 24-hour-a-day weather forecasts, and global communications. But at what price? The expansion of the space program is costing our country billions of dollars every year. The increasing costs and expenditures could affect our economic stability and reduce funding for other earthbound and possibly more important scientific research. In 2004, President Bush announced that he was allotting $100 billion to advance U.S. scientific, security, and economic interests through the expansion of the space program. This plan called for billions of dollars to be spent towards putting a man on the moon again and eventually sending a man to Mars. The survey taken on this topic showed 61% disapproval rating. Jennifer will have more to say on this topic later on in the debate. We've only been in space for a mere 50 years, and there is already an astounding 20,000 large items of space junk now in orbit around the Earth. That is 2 million kilograms of space debris within 2,000 kilometers of Earth. At this rate, it would take 100 years to reduce the volume of space debris by half if the growth is halted immediately. Part of the space debris includes 37 nuclear-powered satellites. They're out of operation now, but are still filled with radioactive fuel that is hot and lethal and will be falling back to the Earth in the future. Given these facts, we must really rethink the way that we are harming space. Not only are we leaving a large amount of debris behind, but also the exhaust gases from our space vehicles and rockets are transforming the properties of the atmosphere. By doing this, we are harming the outer atmosphere that protects us here on Earth. Stephanie will be further investigating this problem later in the debate. The ability to explore space is a great luxury, but we have better things to spend our money on here on Earth. There's disease, poverty, war, and healthcare, just to name a few problems that are plaguing our country right now. Why aren't we putting our resources into these problems instead of exploring the vast realms of space? Did you know that nearly 24,000 people around the world die every day from hunger? Or that one out of every five people lives without clean water? Those are real-life problems affecting our world. Why must we spend billions of dollars exploring beyond? Clearly, there's enough for us to deal with here on Earth. Sarah will be further exploring this issue later in the debate. Former NASA historian Alex Rowland voices his concern when he argues against the exploration of space. He claims that the shuttle program has been more expensive, more dangerous, and less productive than it was promised when it began. In fact, the recent shuttle tragedies prove once again that manned spaceflight is not worth the cost or the risk of lives. Besides the fact that NASA has been costing taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars, it has now cost 14 human lives. Now I'll hand it over to Kelly, who will be presenting the first argument.
Thank you. Okay. First of all, it seems to have become a wide-held belief that the space program is not very successful. People have become too focused on the failures of the space program, when in fact there have been a great deal of benefits that have arisen from the space technology. It must be kept in mind that sacrifices must be made in order to move forward. The space program has had a great deal of success in advancing the medical field, especially from a technological standpoint. We need to take these rewards into account, and when we do, the overwhelming majority of progress can be seen. For example, NASA has invented countless devices, such as a heart pump, that is based on the design of a shuttle's fuel pump system. Its first year out had a 100% success rate, and when you think about it, 2 million people in the United States have congenital heart failure, and the heart pump is estimated to save 35,000 lives per year. Engineers from NASA have also used technology from the high resolution of telescopes to be applied in medical machinery. X-rays and CAT scans have been implemented with this technology to improve the images they produce, allowing doctors to catch an array of problems from cancer to blood clots more efficiently than in the past. The space program has also produced a UV shielding outfit that protects individuals who suffer from a rare skin disease in which they violently react to any sort of ultraviolet light radiation. This suit allows these people the ability to go outside, which would otherwise cause permanent damage to DNA, resulting in melanoma. The beauty of this progression from a medical standpoint is that it is not limited to just one area. Advancements are made in a range of medical fields, from digital resolution to neurology. A robot has been developed that is controlled by a surgeon, and this robot performs brain surgery in instances where human hands would not be sufficiently precise in such delicate operations as repairing hemorrhages. This idea arose from the idea that machines in space can be operated from Earth if needed. The surgeon who controls the robot can be in the next room or on the other side of the world. You can imagine the time and effort this saves a surgeon specializing in a particular field. Instead of traveling thousands of miles to save a person that may not be alive when they get there, the doctor can perform a surgery more precisely while saving crucial time in which life and death are concerned. NASA has virtual reality technology that allows astronauts to train for future missions into outer space. They have used this equipment to help diabetic patients to visually stimulate blood flow to their limbs, which would otherwise prevent nerve damage later in life. Overall, the progression is made in two areas, that of the space program and that of the medical field. Still, people may say it costs too much money to run the space program. However, there are many qualified people that donate their free time to aid in medical advancement. For example, there's a group of retired engineers from NASA that have formed an organization called the Volunteer Professionals for Medical Advancement. They have invented such medical tools as an automated oxygen-enriched system for premature infants, which prevents brain damage by allowing oxygen to flow to their brains. These volunteers work side by side with doctors and other medical professionals to create such devices, their ultimate goal being to provide hospitals with free services that are otherwise unaffordable. The benefits are hard to turn down when worldwide healthcare is such a great concern, especially when the rewards are so great. It is a very tragic thing when astronauts lose their lives during their missions or a space shuttle fails to launch, but there have been thousands of lives saved due to technology in the space program. As I stated previously, the heart pump is estimated to save 35,000 lives per year, but this is an estimation made in relation to the United States, not the world as a whole. There is also research being done presently on microgravity on microorganisms as well as cancer cells and the decay of calcium due to loss of gravity. The point is there are endless possibilities and positive outcomes by allowing the space program to continue.
The idea of these medical benefits coming from space exploration is unnecessary. Why would we spend so much money on exploring space when we can study medicine and cures for disease here on Earth? Isn't it a waste of money? With all the billions of dollars going into the space program, that money could greatly benefit millions of dying people worldwide by going towards cures for heart disease, cancer, and hunger. Although NASA's technology has developed few medical benefits, the cost does not match up to its findings. There are a number of discoveries that NASA claims to have found to aid in medical cures for developments that could just as easily been uncovered without the space exploration program. An example is the heart pump that Kelly mentioned, and it was first used to monitor the astronauts and spacecraft, but that in no way means that there is a need for space exploration to invent this. It just means that the astronauts developed this machine first. Either way, it was going to be invented. Another example that I found on CNN's science article is the use of nitinol, which is an alloy nickel of titanium, and it's used for the rocket that causes satellite to spring open. And the article claims that this great benefit of dental braces comes from space exploration, but when in all actuality, the wire to tighten the braces could have been made from another metal or any other way. Really, once again, having nothing to do with space. Although the UV protection
In the case of UV protection, Kelly mentioned that patients cannot tolerate exposure to sun, but it's another invention that just could have been invented any other way on Earth. And we're not finding anything in space to cure disease and medical benefits, so it's just being thought up by people in the space program that really anyone is capable of finding, and therefore medical reasons for space exploration is unnecessary. And now I'm going to talk about how there's more important things to study here on Earth. There are many problems that our planet is facing that need to be dealt with. These problems range from medical, agricultural, and environmental. There are people dying all the time from disease, war, poverty, and famine whose lives could be saved. The idea of space exploration is by far the last thing our planet needs to be wasting money on. Although it's a great luxury, we have better things to study here on Earth. NASA has spent about $150 billion on space exploration so far, and the costs are continuously rising. Why are we spending so much time discovering space when we have problems here that need to be solved? We need to set new goals and targets in order for our species to survive. The leading cause of death worldwide is atherosclerosis. It's a progressive disease that affects major arteries throughout the body. As a result, it causes stroke, heart attacks, and vascular death. Atherosclerosis is responsible for 22% of all deaths annually. The World Health Organization report of 2004 found that other major leading causes of death to be 19.1% infectious disease, 12.5% cancer, 6.5% pulmonary disease, and 4.9% AIDS. With the statistics so high for all these leading causes of death, our money, time, and effort should not be going to space exploration. It should be going to research on finding cures for these medical issues. Another major problem here on Earth is the global health crisis of hunger. After retrieving facts from Hunger Site in 2006, I discovered that an estimated 1 billion people in the world suffer from hunger and malnutrition. Nearly 24,000 people die each day from hunger and related diseases around the world. 3/4 of these deaths are children under the age of 5. The lack of clean drinking water is a critical problem for 1.1 billion people in the world. That's 1 in every 5 people who are without clean drinking water. This crisis is especially severe in Liberia, which is a tiny West African nation. The United Nations Children's Fund reported of 2006 named that diarrhea in children is a leading cause of death due to malnutrition and contaminated water. With so many people here on Earth living in poverty and having to deal with issues such as hunger, how can we spend billions of dollars on exploring space? Is it really going to do us any good besides waste our much-needed money? With the medical issues that our world is facing today already discussed, we need to look at our environmental crisis, which we are facing as well. The burning of natural gases, coals, and oils contribute to the rising of the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. With these human activities taking place, it's leading to the bigger issue of more greenhouse gases. According to the State of Air 2005 report, the American Lung Association, 142.7 million Americans live in counties with failing grades of particle pollution. Smog is the worst pollutant that is responsible for decreased lung function and respiratory infection. The need for alternative fuel is becoming another critical issue for our Earth. Spending our money on this rather than space program is much more important. As I've shown you, there are many problems that we face here that need to be addressed before we go and spend our money on exploring space. The money spent exploring different planets would be better invested in our own planet rather than others. Living in a world free from disease, pollution, and hunger would be a bigger achievement than anything else.
You don't want to take a minute.
Okay. Take a minute.
Hey. Tony, we love you.
Hey. World in America, we pay for a minimum to grow amount of food because we don't have the ability to transport it to other countries, or they do not have the money to buy it from us. So we pay farmers.
You can talk about social economic, because mostly they're hungry because they have unstable governments. And their warlords are taking over the countries. Like the reason South Africa is starving is because they kicked all the farmers off because they wanted to redistribute the land. They were actually producing food.
Yeah.
I
might
just relate that to why.
No.
Alright.
Okay. Dude, I'm just going to read it. Okay. Alright. If anything, we need to put more money into the space program to avoid catastrophes that have happened in the past, such as the Columbia and Challenger. As Ken said, the annual budget of NASA is about $17 billion, which may sound like a lot, but it really isn't when you look at the big picture. This is only 1% of the government's budget, so we're spending a lot of money on other problems that have arisen in the United States. So budget welfare is about 30% of the government's budget. You can only do so much with $17 billion that the space program has been given. You have to take into account the salary of hundreds of staff, as well as the equipment they need to work with, and the space shuttles, satellites, and other space-bound vessels, which can cause up to hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars to construct and operate. You can't expect to have success and efficiency for these objects, which require a great deal of precision and accuracy in their construction without the money to back it up. Allowing more money, therefore more engineers and man hours into a project can only increase efficiency. This will allow a greater number of qualified engineers to catch flaws that have been missed. Other different viewpoints to expand and develop upon present ideas or come up with new and improved ideas altogether. As I stated before, the volunteers that are part of that nonprofit organization are a product of NASA without actually having to cost money itself. It is an indirect profit arising from the space program, which requires no money to operate. We need all the healthcare and technology we can get as of now, and Brian will talk about the other technologies.
I want to just make one comment about what Zoe said regarding the space shuttle. It's outdated technology. We've been using the same shuttle design for over 25 years. It's time that we do invest in another type of shuttle, which NASA has made plans on doing so, but has not been pursued due to insufficient funding. NASA technology has led to the development of numerous devices which have benefited American public development, that have led to the reduction of pollution and monitoring of toxic emissions. The solutions to city problems and the safety of everyone from automobile drivers to firefighters. NASA has led to integral parts of our society which are used in every day, from cell phones to barcodes. NASA has been involved in everybody's life. NASA technology has also helped combat Earth pollution. The space program has developed or played an integral role in the development of many devices used for the monitoring or cleanup of pollution. Oil spills are a huge contamination problem in the ocean. One oil leak can kill thousands of organisms and make life in that area virtually non-existent. NASA has played a vital role in the development of the beeswax balls that contain microorganisms that eat the oil, helping to clean oil spills. Pollution measuring devices have been developed by NASA to monitor the increasing pollution on Earth. It is a vital instrument used to monitor the gradual destruction of our planet. Smokestack monitors, also developed by NASA, are vital in the regulation of pollutants emitted by smokestacks. By knowing the amount of pollution emitted, the government can monitor and regulate the pollution output from these smokestacks. We all live in Southern California, and we import most of our water from Northern California or the Colorado River. With an ever-growing population, the demand for water is constantly on the rise. As it is becoming more expensive to purchase water, people look to alternative sources. Santee, California has been investing time and money into the possible development of one of NASA's technology on turning urine into drinking water. They're calling this toilet to tap. The process was developed by NASA. Using this technology that NASA has developed, Southern California's water dependence can be solved.
All right.
I'd like to take a time out.
please.
All right.
Okay, first of all, about the health effects and how it's not so bad, as he's saying, there are many things that cause, such as radiation that come down to our earth, about the urination, how we turn that into water, and how they're working on that. Well, it's ridiculous because we already have desalinization tanks used in naval ships already, and it would probably be more cost effective, and we don't need to have that technology, and they could be spending all their time and resources on actually doing space exploration rather than desalinization, which we already have, and that could solve the problem in California with the water shortage problem. And the cleaning, the pollution, the different types of bacteria on Earth, they can clean up pollution, such as oil spills, and it's just
investing
in microbiology.
Microbiologists can discover
and isolate these species of bacteria. The reason why we have people already talking about the debris and looking for all the debris is because we have so much of it. There's about 2,000 tons of just debris going up into space every single day. It's increasing and increasing, and this problem is just is not getting any better, and we need to have some solutions for this. So we can't be putting all our time and money into things that we already have here on Earth.
Okay,
and now to talk about how a debris is not good, and how it'll just evaporate into the Earth or into the space. That is a little bit far-fetched and sugar-coated. And George Bush and Richard Cheney, our vice president, they're actually expanding the U.S. space military activities even further, and it's the prompt development of a missile defense system, and it's described as a one-layer and overall space military program. Although penetration of space by people and their machines is but a few decades old, already the space above the Earth has become contaminated. There are now 110,000 man-made objects larger than half an inch orbiting in the space above the Earth. And the situation has gotten so serious that NASA now replaces pitted orbiter windows after most flights of space shuttles. The amount of space junk has doubled since 1990 and now poses a navigational hazard. The U.S. and Norway are planning a giant radar station to be called Globus 2 in Norway's Arctic, specifically to better monitor orbiting debris. As I said, a total of 3,000 tons of space debris surrounds the Earth today, and the rapid accumulation of debris could complicate the further developments of astronautics, since there would be a direct threat of collisions with debris fragments which travel at very high altitudes. 37 nuclear-powered satellites put in space by the U.S. and former Soviet Union. The operation of the satellites is over, but the radioactive fuel in them is still hot and lethal, and they'll be falling back to Earth in the centuries ahead. So you see, this isn't just simply about debris coming down to Earth or just dissolving into the atmosphere. This is also about radiation that is affecting our sun and coming to Earth and affecting us as a whole population on Earth.
NASA's insistence on its using nuclear power in space is due in part to its desire to coordinate its operations with the U.S. military, which regards nuclear power as necessary for the high-powered weapons such as lasers it would take to deploy in space in upcoming years. Moon agreements does not exclude potential commercial activities such as space transportation, space tourism, space-based telecommunications, power generation, medical and agricultural product development at all. It is most serious U.S. mission occurred in 21st of April 1964 when a satellite powered by SNAP-NA fueled with plutonium failed to achieve orbit and dropped from the sky, disintegrating. The 2.1 pounds of plutonium scattered around the world, a worldwide soil sampling program carried out in 1970, showed SNAP-NA debris to be present in all continents and all latitudes. So like I said, this affects all of us, not just the astronauts. This isn't only in the U.S., but the worst Soviet space nuclear accident also occurred in 24th of January 1978 when Cosmos 954, a satellite powered by an onboard nuclear reactor, fell from orbit, crashing into the Northwest Territories of Canada, splattering nuclear debris over a huge area. Sizable amounts of radioactive debris survived re-entry and were spread over a 600 kilometers path from Great Slave Lake to Baker Lake. The space shuttle, the Russians report by NASA, which revealed that the space shuttle Endeavour took hits from 92 pieces of space debris during its recent STS-100 mission to international space stations. There are about 9,000 tractable objects larger than 4 inches in orbit. That's why we have people looking for all the debris, and that's specifically why they're there and getting paid for this, because we're already putting all this debris into it. So that's more money that we're putting into the space exploration. The satellite launches and the use of telecommunications could be having a devastating effect on the vital protective properties of the outer atmosphere. And add in energetic radio waves used in telecommunication, and we have a recipe for disaster. The outer atmosphere protects the Earth's surface from a constant bombardment of higher energy, and we need to be doing something about this. We see this Earth as just a limitless, boundless space that we cannot create and destroy, but we really need to think about saving our Earth and our atmosphere.
I want to, first of all, rebut your rebuttal. you said that there was already water purification systems on aircraft carriers.
Mm-hmm.
But those are using chemicals to purify the water. What NASA has developed is ionization, which kills all the bacteria. Not using chemicals helps, hence more healthy. And now for my rebuttal. Space pollution is a huge problem that NASA has been addressing since the late 80s. Based on data from January 2006, there is 5 million kilograms of debris orbiting Earth. This breaks down to 41 million cubic meters per gram. Space pollution is mostly all destroyed by the atmosphere upon reentry. Even if a piece happens to not be vaporized, the probability of debris to hit anyone is virtually impossible. The real threat is to the astronauts who view the possibility of a collision as an acceptable risk to further space exploration. Most of the pollution is caused by poorly funded space programs, that is, cost efficient to release debris in space as opposed to bringing it back to Earth, so to not deter future expeditions. There have been many proposed solutions to reducing pollution, but have not received enough financial support to be proven feasible, such as the lasers that Stephanie was talking about. NASA has even thought of new launch techniques to reduce pollutant emissions, such as ballistic and magnetic rail launches, have not been pursued due to their immense costs. One proposed solution is to leave the pollution out there for future generations as a scrapyard. Future corporations could use this as an iron salvage business, cleaning the pollution for financial profit, much like bums and cans on the beach. But the solution lies in increasing funding for the space exploration. With more funding, NASA could invest in pollution c- cleanup and more environmental friendly operations. Now, Skip's going to talk about the economic benefits of the space program.
Thank you, Brian.
No problem, Skip.
Take it away, Skip.
So I'm going to try to be brief. I'm going to keep my argument very limited.
Good job, Skip.
My name is William Murray. I'm here at the debate today to define the economic benefits of space travel and the definition of the future of the space program. Okay. The space program is defined for this discussion as commercial private industries whose sole goal is to advance, promote, and continue to support the exploration of outer space, including manned space travel, development of technology and medical research that benefits the day-to-day lives of those individuals whose nations are participants in these ventures. For our purposes here today, I wish to draw an important distinction between a commonly held belief and the reality of what the quote-unquote space program is. NASA, the National Aeronautic and Space Administration, is not the sole source of economic success or failure, nor is it the definition of this program as a whole. Many people tend to look at all the data from NASA and make their distinctions, and there's much, much more to the larger picture than just simply NASA. I wish to define my argument, and I wish to make 3 points. The space program as a whole, as the past, was founded and fueled by Cold War pressures, although many of the aspects of the original concept of the space program, what we conceptualize as NASA, have had a history of economic trouble, the entire program itself is not an economic failure. Today, with the privatization of many aspects of the program, there exists and will continue to represent a viable economic opportunity well into the future. The future of the space program will be defined by private entrepreneurial endeavors rather than by NASA. Okay. Here's some fun facts. Here's some budget figures for NASA. I'm going to try to give you an overview of what NASA is and what the space program is defined as. There is private industry, and there's NASA and the Department of Defense, which are the governmental body rather than the private institution itself. In 2003, NASA requested $15 billion and were granted $15.3 for the 2003 fiscal year. The loss of the Space Shuttle Columbia on February 1st, 2003 was a major driving force toward the debate over NASA's future. Okay, NASA originally defined the goal of the space program to shuttle cargo to and from the space station. Due to several setbacks, this original goal has been reconsidered. Okay, now the Department of Defense. The Department of Defense has an annual size of their space program equal to NASA, a little larger, about $20.4 billion for the fiscal year of 2004. The Department of Defense has a very large distinction from NASA and from private industry in that many of its programs are classified and the budget is not represented by a separate line item on budget figures. So it's very hard to make any type of definitive statements about the Department of Defense and their budgets. The primary role of the Department of Defense Space Program has been to manage and maintain early warning systems and protection against the threat of intercontinental ballistic missiles, admittedly a remnant of the Cold War, and military surveillance intelligence at this day is the DoD's primary role. Two significant developments happened in 2004. Following the disaster with the Challenger, the space shuttle program in many ways was believed to be something which needed to be reconsidered. Now, in January 14th of 2004, President Bush announced that NASA will once again return to the moon and build the space station there. Okay? Now, in the following year, the FAA opened up private manned space travel and agreed to issue permits to private institutions that will offer space tourism. So on December 10, 2004, officially the space industry of tourism was born. Okay? We're not strictly limited to NASA. There's many other things besides NASA which define the quote-unquote space program. NASA embraced the concept of private industry on many of its missions. Okay, I want to give you some statistics here.
You're done?
We're done?
Yeah, that's
right. Well, there's much more to it, but okay, I ran out of time.
You want to take a minute break?
Come
on. We'll take a minute break. Okay. Actually, you know what? No, just go. We'll go after you.
Okay. No.
So for my rebuttal to what he said, he is right in that there are many different people who will be willing to fund space exploration. But even when taken with other countries as an initiative, the space program suffers many failures and setbacks. So Spain's example of cost increase and project delays is the International Space Station, which was once envisioned to be a stopover service station for space travelers, as well as an assembly and manufacturing plant. The ISS is now expected to be completed in 2010, nearly 16 years late, and $92 billion over budget. So you can see, even with other countries helping us to go to space, the cost of these endeavors do cost all of our countries a lot of money, and all of our countries are faced with the same problems at home, which we can be addressing. $92 billion is a lot of money, and especially in a lot of other countries. So that can be used a lot more usefully in other areas. NASA also announced that it will abandon the space station after only 7 years of full operation, after all the time, money, and commitment that we have put into it with other countries. The ISS is another glaring link in a continuous chain of space projects that are either abandoned and in disaster or deliver far less than initially promised. Anything else?
Okay, now we'll take a minute. You want to take a minute, or you just want to do 30 seconds?
I'll just take a quick 30-second rebuttal.
Okay, 30-second rebuttal.
Okay, Jennifer, I agree with many of your points. Thank you for raising them for me. I want to raise some several vital statistics which I want to bring to the group's attention. 1996, $77 billion was spent on space commerce. 53% of that came from private industry. 1997, private industry financed 42 commercial launches compared to 41 government-sponsored military research launches, some of which included commercial cargo. Most commercial travel comes from satellite television and personal communication services, including the global satellite positioning system, which can pinpoint the individual's location at any point on the globe.
That's 30 seconds.
That's 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, Skip. Okay. Now I'll address the argument of cost effectiveness for the space program. In 2004, when President Bush announced the renewed spirit of discovery and to advance the scientific, security, and economic interests of the United States by granting $100 billion to the space program. After that announcement, it's important for us to decide whether the space program is worth the risk of cost growth and expenditures that could actually harm our economic stability and reduce funding available for other Earth-bound scientific research projects. The rumblings of dissatisfaction have been building. We are faced with the question, why has increased research funding been accompanied by decreased effectiveness in the conduct of space physics research? Complex technical programs, such as the space program, routinely experience increases in costs and delays in schedules that programs generally pursue that significantly alter original plans without fulfilling the mission's objectives. Big science programs generally pursue broad scientific goals perceived to be of national importance. They are costly and technically complex and incorporate many experiments. As a result, they tend to be defined and managed by committees of administrators and require long planning and selling phases. All of this results in a large measure of uncertainty on the actual effectiveness and production after all the money that we give to them. One gets the perception that the U.S. space research capabilities have steadily eroded. In 2004, the Congressional Budget Office Committee raised questions over NASA's budgets and schedules. It pointed out to the long history of NASA's cost growth problems and space program. CBO's findings suggest that if costs for the new exploration mission grew to a similar degree, funding of the space program's objectives could require adding approximately $32 billion to NASA's budget, and a total of $271 billion up to the year 2020. If NASA chose to meet potentially higher exploration costs,
CBO estimated the government would be forced to reallocate as much as 24% of funds from other federal science programs within the next 2 years. So we would have to reallocate, as I said, 24% of the money going to other research endeavors. Another recent report generated by the government's accountability office faulted NASA for being unable to complete an audit of the agency's budget for the past 5 years and labeled it at high risk. I don't think any one of us have got to go by without filing taxes for the last 5 years without somebody knocking on our door or asking us some questions. I believe we should do the same of NASA's space program. The 2004 GAO report revealed that NASA had lost $34 million in government property since 1997 and has failed to keep track of items, including a $300,000 robot. That's a little costly. Where did it go? So what's the problem? The cost of space initiatives may rise above anticipated levels for a variety of reasons. Initial cost estimates are usually overly optimistic because problems with important features of the program are not foreseen or properly accounted for in calculating their initial budget. Unexpected technical hurdles develop, requiring more costly solutions than planners had anticipated. Also, the increase in labor rates and more expensive raw materials become over time. So things such as the Mars Climate Orbiter is another example of a failure in the space program. The orbiter weighed 1,400 pounds, carried 650 pounds of fuel, cost $327.6 million for total orbiter and lander, $193 million for spacecraft development, and $91.7 million for launch. For all of you listening without a calculator, these costs come to $655.1 million. It all failed. Why? Because one engineering team didn't tell the other engineering team to switch to metric units. Is it worth this cost?
Okay, we'll take a minute.
No.
We got a last minute.
Definitely
out,
not.
No. No,
no. All right. So what are you going to do for the rebuttal on this? I'm just going to also, for the final,
spending in general,
how many
has been increased?
Yeah,
it's not necessarily
massive.
Yeah,
it's the general trend. Well, no, the 20.8 cents, that's just all the bullshit with the
insurance.
That's why I'm going to hit on it. But, you know, we're talking about wasting money here. We're talking about wasting money, spending in a lot of countries that don't do it.
Well, what they said made my argument for
the
conversation. You're lying,
no,
I'm
lying.
Okay. At the end of it, please. Okay. All right, well, real quickly, we're done with the minute timeout, but we have some guests here, and they want to ask a question real quick. So,
just one?
I don't know, if you want to ask one or two questions, whatever the case may be, just ask whoever it was.
One of you.
All right.
This question is directed towards Jennifer's group. If unmanned missions are more cost-effective than manned missions, why do we insist on sending men and women to space?
The space program hopes that by sending manned missions, we'll be able to get to other planets such as Mars and be able to colonize them in case the planet is faced with overpopulation and depletion of resources. But this is generally not a good idea because all of our manned missions haven't really gone very far and have resulted in a lot of deaths when you consider how many people have actually gone into space.
Plus on top of that, the debris that's hitting them is not only hitting the space shuttles, but they also have to have people detect within a 300 kilometer radius of the debris that might hit them. So it's very dangerous in space. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Our research also showed that an unmanned mission costs 1/10 as much as a manned mission, so also a cost thing.
Plus, we have problems with sending humans into space. Research shows that because of cosmic rays, that up to, that very many of the people will suffer brain damage as well as cancer due to the cosmic rays.
But that's an acceptable risk that they're taking for the phase and for their
all
scientists take a risk.
But it's
Henry,
not only
Henry
there.
Henry Benlili, who was the one that discovered radiation, died from radiation. The people who decided, the woman who discovered the DNA, the actual one who did the experiment, she died from finding it. So scientists always end up paying a price.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true, but it takes 2.7 years to reach Mars, and in that time period, they will really be facing health consequences due to the cosmic radiation. Plus the fact that the
that's only if we're traveling our current speed. If we go up to our new physics speed, we'll reach it there.
Well, can you would be correct if it was just towards one person getting radiation? But if you would have listened, it's the whole world getting radiation. You know, it's not just one person; it's everybody on this Earth.
Okay, so
they're like, okay.
Well, thank you. Do you have any other questions or?
Is there any questions you guys would like to ask?
Okay, this question is directed towards Brian, or Skip's group. You talked about beeswax balls and how it helps clean up oil spills.
Yeah.
What exactly comes out of these beeswax
balls? Well, after the microorganisms have eaten all the as much of the oil that they have, the beeswax balls explode, releasing CO2, water, and oxygen.
Thank you, Brian.
No problem.
And audience members.
All right. Just the first name of whoever was speaking, so they know that we're not making this up.
My name's Eric. All
right. Thank you, Eric.
Eric, do you have a last name?
Amboy.
Okay, thank you.
Just say your name so we know
who
the other one.
Yeah. Oh, the other one is Kana.
Trent.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're done.
All right.
Okay, now we're going back to Jennifer just went, so now it's Skip's rebuttal.
Skip, do you have a rebuttal?
Skip already did
your
rebuttal, didn't you?
I didn't do a rebuttal for you.
No, because Jennifer just went and rebuttal, and then Jennifer went again. Now it's Skip's turn
Skip
to rebuttal.
Jennifer, as a general trend, I want to point several things out about your statements regarding the increase of the NASA space program and the nature of research in and of itself, where there's a lot of failed missions. That's the game of being in research itself. Not to say NASA doesn't have its problems or did not have its own issues throughout its history. It's always been a financially troubled organization, but there's been a very, very strong outcry for the privatization of the industry, which I think you very well made a strong argument for. You mentioned accountability on a financial level. NASA has problems with their books, in short. By moving this to the private industry, to, let's say, a publicly held organization, you're going to eliminate any type of budget problem because you're going to have a third-party oversight system ensuring the fidelity of the stock. So that's one argument. I think if you privatized and you move many of these if you move many of these functions, you'd have a very strong space program. NASA right now is looking to outsource to several companies operations which they used to do in what they call low orbit maintenance, which they want to hire private organizations to do the functions which they did themselves, but they can do it at a cheaper rate. Okay, now there's also one thing I wanted to mention. The next leg and the future of space travel in and of itself is going to be defined through bonus programs. Like there's one in particular called the Assange X Prize, which is a $10 million purse offered to private party to launch a rocket capable of carrying 3 people into space twice in a 2-week period. That prize was won in 2004.
Okay.
And for my 30-second rebuttal to that, I agree with him that by moving it to the private sector, this might be beneficial and change people's argument towards it or problem with the space program, but at this point, the private sector contributes very little money to the overall cost of space exploration. With a $319 billion deficit recorded for the 2005 fiscal year, $8 trillion national debt, are taxpayers really ready to pay this $100 billion to go back into space? I don't think so.
Can I rebuttal?
Did we do this at 2:30?
No.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Very clear distinction.
Okay.
Well, not really.
Well, just go ahead.
So really fast, very clear distinction has to be made between the benefit of NASA as a whole as they try to outsource things which are financially unprofitable to them, or rather financially unfavorable to them, that is going to trickle down to the American community because you now have a less of a budget crisis, and the money which was spent in an ineffective program will have a higher degree. They're going to do it better in the private sector, and NASA recognizes it.
All right. I'll now start wrapping things up for Team Copernicus. All right, the main opposition to Team Copernicus has always been money, money, money. It costs too much, it costs too much, it costs too much. I've already brought up the point that $23.7 billion was spent in 2005 on pork barrel spending. Additionally, everyone talks about how we need to basically solve the issues with the world hunger and world populations. Until the UN gets their act right, there's no reason to even try. The UN is a corrupt organization which is supposed to be responsible for helping people. And why is the U.S. the only one that's doing it? When the typhoon happened, the U.S. is the only one. I say that other countries start chipping in their part. It's not America's fault that people in Africa decided that they were going to rape, murder, and drive off the farmers so they could reclaim the land. So instead of actually having property, vegetables and stuff to sell, they're now starving. That's not our fault. The social and economic problems of other countries is not the fault of America. We should, if we're going to help Americans, true. So first let's cut off all this pork barrel spending, and we need to stop social programs, like I said, that account for more than 20.8 cents of every single dollar that comes in is spent on worthless social programs for the most part, except for like maybe 10 cents is good. Well, we're paying people to stay at home and watch TV. That's a worthless problem. So I think Team Copernicus has pretty much shown that we know the planet will die. That's a given. Eventually the sun will become too hot. That's a period. Eventually also you have other factors. You have the fact that medical advances, and people can say that, yeah, medical advances will happen anyways, but they don't. It's either war or space exploration that happens. It makes medical advances. We can help and pray for something to happen, but it doesn't happen. It's just the way that life is. And technological advances, he was talking about desalinization on naval ships is done because that's the only way it is. It's not cost effective. It costs, uses way too much energy. That's the reason why we don't use it. That's the reason the only place that uses desalinization is pressurized in San Clemente. Traditional methods are not cost effective and they're no good. So we know that, and Skip was just talking about the benefits of financial wise. So we have economic benefits. We have technological advances and we have medical advances, and we know that eventually we're going to need to do more to try and reach out in this universe. So with all that being said, I think the views that say that it's too costly when we have all these other wasteful programs, and the pollution in space is a threat that astronauts are willing to accept. All scientists take a risk. So if they're willing to accept it, 14 lives in however long the space program has been flying is not that much. It may sound like a lot, but 14 lives is nothing.
Can I have a rebuttal for your conclusion?
No. just first. So, all right. Now, with all that being said, I'll go ahead and I'll just turn it back to Zoe for her conclusion.
Thank you, Kim. The years that we've put into the space exploration have yielded little practical discoveries and we have demonstrated during this debate that the cons of space exploration really do outweigh the pros. There are several reasons why we took the stand against space exploration. Let me sum them up for you. We are currently spending billions of dollars every year to pay for space exploration. This seems a little odd considering the people of this country are skeptical enough about sending our resources to other countries, let alone spending billions of dollars using large amounts of materials and sending people to a whole other planet. According to a poll released in 2004, 3/5 of all Americans oppose President Bush's plans to return to the moon and eventually put a man on Mars. This plan called for an additional $1 billion over 5 years, in addition to the annual budget of $15.4 billion. Out of the people polled, 9% said they would spend billions of dollars on space exploration. 40% said they would rather put money towards improving education. 27% said they would use the money to balance the federal budget. 13% said they would rather spend the money on cleaning up the environment. And last, 7% wanted to spend the money to enlarge the military. From our research, we have also learned that we are making a mess out of space. We already know that we've made a mess out of our own planet, and now we're paying the environmental price for that damage. We must avoid making the same mistakes in space that we've made here on Earth. In order to prevent making the same mistakes again, we propose these measures to be taken into consideration before further exploring space. First, we must treat the Moon, Mars, and the rest of the planetary bodies in the universe as wildernesses that need to be protected. Second, we must create a set of ethical guidelines to protect life that we encounter in space, if we ever encounter any extraterrestrial life. Third, we must take measures to ensure that there is no contamination of space. Fourth, we must discourage the right for private agencies to own property in space. And finally, we must create legal power to oversee all these concerns. In conclusion, I'd like to leave you all with a few questions. At this point in time, regardless of what our other team says, we really do not have any reason to fear human extinction on Earth. And even if we did, who would want to live out in space? We're on Mars. So why are we pouring money into looking for a second home? The fact that an unmanned expedition costs one-tenth as much as a manned mission to space and accomplishes just as much or even more is proof that there is much less scientific reason that men want to explore space. What is the real reason behind man's desire to explore the unknown frontier of space? Is the real reason behind space exploration purely inspiration? And a final thought to leave you with, given that NASA is strapped for funds already, how are they going to pay to clean up the mess they've made? And unless anyone else has anything to say, that concludes our debate.
Woo-hoo! Oh, the